Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I have a great show planned for you all today. My guest will be Dr. Jennifer Harris, who is the Director of Marketing Initiatives at the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity, and I'll have her on in a little bit, and she'll tell us more about the Rudd Center and her work there. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, going on in and around the city, and ways that you can all get involved in our little pushback against our new administration. So, you know, the first thing to really talk about is what's going on in our new administration. I mean, it's really hard to ignore it. It's in our faces every day. The march in Washington was amazing, as well as I got reports about the march in many cities across the country, especially in New York. And it was just an amazing, amazing turnout, over 600 cities in the U.S. and other cities around the world. And, you know, it was such a huge movement, such a stand up against what we are all facing. And how does President Trump respond? He responds by signing into order the gag order that makes it impossible for any NGO across the world who takes funding from the U.S. to even mention the word abortion or talk about contraceptives. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, and people just constantly are giving me little tidbits of information, and every time, you know, it's hard to take a deep breath and just breathe out and not get emotional about all of these things. You know, I heard that, you know, President Trump's son said, you know, what do these women want? Free manicures and pedicures? I mean, he has no clue what we want. You know, the fact that erectile dysfunction is covered by insurance, but contraceptive is not, that doesn't make sense. They get covered to get us pregnant, but we can't get covered to keep from getting pregnant. I mean, you know, everything is just so slanted, and it's really very sad. And as we move forward and want to talk about sustainable food, as I wrote about this week in my newsletter, we can't really talk about a sustainable food system if we don't have a sustainable democracy. And we need to really come together and focus on that. And we all need to really stay vigilant and stay active. And I, you know, for years, I'm always talking about being a participant citizen in our democracy. But it's really more important now than ever. The Indivisible Guide that I've talked about in the last couple of weeks is a wonderful guide that, you know, will keep posting things of action, ways that you can get involved and take action. One thing that came across my desk that I already did that I want to encourage all of you to do is to actually just write a quick letter, just one simple line to Donald Trump. And it says, don't make America sick again. Improve Obamacare. Don't repeal it. That one line. And they're recommending that you put that into an envelope and send it off to the White House. President Donald Trump, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, NW for Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20500. Just imagine what 53 million letters arriving at the White House would look like. So I'm encouraging all of you to do that today. Stick that letter in the mail. And other ways we can show up, I mean, in New York, Senator Schumer is a supporter of a lot of what we are looking for. But there is a rally outside of his office on February 2nd in Pine Lawn, on Pine Lawn Road in Melville, to ask him to resist Trump's anti-environmental agenda. But there's so many ways that you can get involved. There's, you know, the People's Climate Movement is planning another march in Washington, D.C. and in New York and other cities across the country for April 29th. And there's a planning meeting for that also on February 2nd from 6:30 to 8:30. There's no shortage of ways that people can get involved. but we really all need to. And I know we're all so busy in our lives already, so it's hard to add anything to this. But if we don't, we won't see the changes that we need to see, and we won't get our senators and representatives on board with us. I mean, they do care about reelection, and if they know that it's not just the minority that wants these things, but it's the majority, they will hopefully encourage the new president to make some different choices. So I beg all of you to really stand up, get involved, look up that Indivisible Guide online. It's a great, great document. Really impressed with that. I also want to share with you that the Environmental Working Group, which is an organization that is very close to my heart that I love and help support, just came out with their new Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen list. The Dirty Dozen list is a list of the top fruits and vegetables that are most heavily sprayed and the ones that are most important to buy organic. Many people, even if they know organic is better, because they're on a limited budget, don't feel like they can always buy organic. But if you at least stick to this Dirty Dozen list and try to avoid the things on that list that are not on that list that are heavily sprayed, you will be reducing your pesticide intake by something like 90%. So really try to follow that. And then the Clean 15 is the other side of the spectrum. Those are the fruits and vegetables that are least sprayed, the ones that are least important to get organic. And I know, like, for instance, asparagus has always been on that list. And, you know, if you can pay $1.99 for a bunch of asparagus when they're in season, as opposed to $4.99, go for it, because they're less sprayed. So that's good information to know. So the Environmental Working Group is great. They're also the organization that puts out the list on the best sunscreens and what's in our cosmetics. They're just a great website to peruse. So check that out. And also, there's a petition on my website to tell Governor Cuomo to resist the Pilgrim Pipeline. You know, the Spectra Pipeline is just bad for us. It's going to cross the Hudson two times, and as research shows, all pipelines leak. I'm sure all of us heard that the Keystone XL pipeline and the Dakota pipeline, that both had been halted by President Obama. Although I must say, it only got halted by President Obama because he responded to the protests that we all stood up and did. He didn't do it of his own free will, but nevertheless, he did do it, has now already been reversed by this new president. So, you know, years ago, I was down in Washington with Bill McKibben from 350.org and stood up against the XL pipeline, and I will do it again because it's that important. These pipelines are, you know, covering our country everywhere. They're going back and forth, and they all leak, and it is polluting our waterways. It's polluting our land, and we just need to push towards renewable energies. And I have to say that I'm really happy to share with you that Governor Cuomo in New York has made a commitment to wind power, and he is, you know, urging the Long Island Power Authority to move forward with their offshore wind project, which is really, really great news. There's a wind project happening now off the coast of Block Island in Rhode Island. So if we invest our money in the right areas, we really can make a difference. But they're not going to do that without a push from the public. So we need to show our power and really stand up. So a couple other things coming up in and around the area that I want to share with you. This weekend, January 28th, there's a Beginning Farmers and Food Processes workshop taking place up in the Boston area. And this is being sponsored by the Carrot Project. Information about it is on my website. But if you are a beginning farmer or want to do a startup urban farm or food processing, this might be a workshop that would really interest you. So check that out. Like I said, all of these things I'm going to mention right now, you can find more information on my website at ieatgreen.com. This weekend on Sunday, the Slow Food North Shore's New Year's party is actually sold out. It's at the Oyster Bay Brewery, and we're really thrilled with the response we've gotten. Really excited about that. During the day, Slow Food New York City is sponsoring a chili non carne cook-off at Jimmy's 43, and that should be a lot of fun. So if you like chili, come on down and be a judge. It's from 1 to 3 at Jimmy's 43 on 43 East 7th Street. And you can just show up. It's $20 for Slow Food members, $25 for non-members. The People's Climate Movement, as I said earlier, is having an organizational meeting on Thursday, February 2nd from 6:30 to 8:30 in the city. And if you can make it to that, that would be great. This is going to be a big, big, huge protest, as big as the Women's March or bigger. Let's try to make it even bigger. And like I said, there will be it's planning to happen in Washington, D.C., but there will be sister marches all around the country. So if you can help in planning that, I know they're looking for volunteers for that. February 9th, Slow Food East End is having a pasta-making class, which should be a lot of fun. It's out in East Hampton, so it's a bit out there. But if you're in that out that way or want to make a weekend trip of it, go on to the Slow Food East End website and sign up for that. February 11th is the second annual City Growers Education Conference in Brooklyn, and that is, you know, a conference that's bringing people together who are, you know, urban farmers and educators, and bringing everybody together in the community around farms. And it should be a wonderful workshop. So anyway, if you're interested in that, you can sign up for that. New York Oyster and Beer Festival is also February 11th. That's at the Tunnel in Chelsea. Hawthorne Valley Biodynamic Winter Intensive is taking place February 19th through February 24th. There's a sliding scale set up for that, but it's an opportunity to learn about biodynamics, which is kind of like organic on steroids. It's a really wonderful organic method designed by Rudolf Steiner, an Austrian philosopher who is also the founder of the Waldorf School movement and anthroposophy. And it's a wonderful spiritual way of growing food. And the food that is grown biodynamically is way tastier than any food I've ever experienced. So it's really wonderful. It's very complex. It's really a great, great growing method. So if you don't know about biodynamics, check it out. And if you're interested in learning about it, this is a wonderful intensive. Just Food is gearing up for their annual conference at Columbia's Teachers College, March 12th and 13th. Just Food is a wonderful nonprofit in the city that helps promote school gardens and community gardens and does a lot of training and education throughout the city. So they're a wonderful organization. And there's more and more. I have so many things listed on my website. I don't want to take up any more time, though. So you can check out all these events on my website. But I do want to share with you my recipe before I invite Dr. Jennifer Harris on to talk to us about the Rudd Center. And this week's recipe is a spicy black bean soup. You know, in the cold weather, I just come home sometimes and I'm just craving soup. The one trick about black bean soup is you need to plan the day before because you want to soak the beans. Of course, you can use canned beans if you're in a pinch, but there's really no comparison to actually soaking the beans and using your own dried beans that you've soaked overnight. So plan ahead. Soak 2 cups of black turtle beans overnight, and then you're going to drain those, and the rest of the ingredients that you're going to mix with it, I used 11 cups of water. I probably added another cup by the end of it, so say 12 cups of water. One bay leaf, 14 cloves of garlic, one onion chopped, one red pepper chopped, one red onion. I really use just about half an onion chopped really small, and that's for the garnish at the end. A quarter cup of cilantro plus one teaspoon for the garnish. 2 teaspoons of cumin, 1 teaspoon of chili powder, 2 teaspoons of salt, 1.5 tablespoons of green chili, and 1.5 tablespoons of red chilies. Now, let me just backtrack a little. These are, this is jalapeno chilies and red Thai chilies that I grew in my garden that I actually sauteed and chopped fine, sauteed, and froze in little batches. So I use that. You can use a fresh chili pepper, fresh jalapeno pepper, whatever you'd like, about 1.5 tablespoons worth, okay? 1 piece of kombu that you're going to use in cooking the beans. Kombu is seaweed, and when you're cooking it with beans, it interacts with the beans and makes them less gassy. So, you know, if you are challenged with gas after eating a lot of beans, this is a wonderful tool to help reduce that. I used one lime, the juice of lime, towards the end of the cooking process to add to the bean soup, and also 1 can of fire-roasted tomatoes with chilies. I get those from Trader Joe's. It already has some hot chili in it. Again, if you don't want your soup so spicy, you can just buy regular fire-roasted tomatoes without the chilies. And you can also leave out some of the hot chili peppers. But you're going to start by soaking the beans overnight and then draining them. You can either put them into a large pot and cook for a couple hours, or you can put them into a pressure cooker. And you're going to do that with the kombu, the salt, and 8 cloves of the garlic. And you're either going to cook it at a high pressure for 30 minutes or in a large stock pot, like I said, for a couple hours. Meanwhile, you're going to saute the remaining garlic with the onions and peppers and olive oil. And when that's soft, you're going to add the cumin and the chili powder and saute that for a few minutes. And sauteing the spices helps bring out the flavor. When the beans are done, you're going to drain them. I'm sorry. No. When the beans are done, you're going to add the vegetables to the beans. And you're going to puree that with a handheld immersion blender. If you don't have that, you can take the beans out and puree them in a food processor, or you can do it in batches in a blender. But absolutely having an immersion stick is the way to go. If you don't have one, it's a small investment, but it's really worth it if you're into making cream soups. I use it all the time whenever I'm making my squash soup or bean soups, and it's just a wonderful tool. And so you're going to blend that up, and it's your choice, again, whether you want it really blended smooth or whether you like some chunks in it. Everyone's a little different. You might want to take a few beans out, blend most of it really, really smooth, and then add a few beans back in as chunks. Sometimes I also will add a little frozen corn to the chowder if I want it to be a little chunky or have some texture to it, and that's a really nice addition as well. When you serve it, you're going to add the cilantro after you blend it so that you have some green in the soup. And you can also taste the soup and add more salt or cumin or chili powder, depending on how spicy you'd like it. After you've blended it, you're going to add the cilantro in. And when you're serving it, you're going to garnish each bowl with a little bit of cilantro and red onion and a wedge of the lime. And that's it. It's very simple to make. It's delicious. As always, I'd love feedback, so please write to me. Let me know if you've made it. Let me know how you like it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Dr. Jennifer Harris. As I said before, she's the Director of Marketing Initiatives at the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity, and she's also an Associate Professor in Allied Health Sciences at the University of Connecticut. And her work, she leads a multidisciplinary team of researchers who study food marketing to children, adolescents, and parents, and how it impacts their diets and health. And I'm going to let her tell us more about it, but most of us know that childhood obesity and diabetes is in epidemic proportions, And a lot of it is linked to how much marketing and how much focus is put on kids at an early age. And I'm going to let Dr. Harris tell us more about that. Hi, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. First, before we actually get into the actual your expertise with the marketing, can you just give my listeners a little bit of background on the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity? Just tell them a little bit about that.
Sure. The Rudd Center is at the University of Connecticut, and our mission is to promote solutions to childhood obesity, poor diet, and weight bias through research and policy. And so most of us are academic researchers, but I think what makes our center unique is that we also have a very, a great team of communications people who help us disseminate our findings through the media, through the press, through our internal communications, and also people whose job is to work with the advocates and policymakers and NGOs that are interested in studying childhood obesity related issues and actually implementing the actions that improve the environment for kids. And so our partners come to us with ideas for research that will help them inform policies that they're working on, and also they use our research to support the need for such policies, things like soda taxes and healthier foods in schools and improvements in food marketing to kids. Those are all issues that we've worked on and helped inform with our research.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I wrote about actually this week in my newsletter was actually how much money of SNAP money, people who are on food stamps, how much of that is actually used for healthy food versus soft drinks. And I think soft drinks and salty snacks is still like at the top of the list of what so much of the SNAP benefits are used for, as opposed to healthy food. So, the work you're doing is so important. We need to get that education out there
Thanks.
Now, the Rudd Center also, I think, has an annual conference, which I see every year, but I haven't made it to yet. When is that coming up?
No, we don't. I'm sorry. We don't have an annual conference.
You don't have that? Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, I think they had it when it was at Yale. But anyway, let's talk about your expertise in marketing to children and why we should be concerned about food and beverages that are marketed to children. Can you share some of your research with us?
Sure. Well, the reason we should be concerned about food marketing to kids is that, first of all, the food industry has really targeted children as young as 2 to 5 years old as important future consumers for their business. And so the way they do that is they market extensively to children and young teens. They spend almost $2 billion a year advertising their products directly to these audiences. And, that wouldn't be so bad, except that 85% of the products of the advertising that kids see for food and drinks are products that are high in fat, sugar, or sodium. So, just to get a perspective, on a daily basis, on average, every child in the U.S. sees 13 food advertisements on television alone. So that's a lot of advertising, and a lot of advertising for products like sugary drinks and high-sugared cereals and candy and snacks and things that really contribute to poor diet and long-term health issues and obesity issues.
Mm-hmm. And has there been any regulations put on that over the last couple of years with this kind of research coming out and showing how damaging it is?
Well, there's been a lot of things going on. In 2007, the food industry came out with a self-regulatory voluntary program called the Children's Food and Beverage Advertising Initiative. And, you know, if you read their materials and hear the companies talk about it, you'd think that they have, you know, really turned the corner and are only marketing healthier products to kids. But our research and that of other researchers has shown that their definition, first of all, their definition of healthier products isn't the same as most nutritionist definitions. So,
right.
You know, things like popsicles with vitamin C are considered healthy, and, you know, Lunchables and Goldfish crackers and things like that. Another issue is that they only have pledged to reduce marketing during children's programming. So, you know, on Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network, but they're not looking at advertising or marketing in other types of programming that kids watch a lot of. So, for example, our research has shown that Nick at Night has more unhealthy food marketing than almost any other channel, and that is being watched by lots of kids, and more kids than adults. And then another major issue with their program is that they say that they only need to protect children up to age 11. And so once a child turns 12, according to the food industry, they're, you know, not at all vulnerable to effects of unhealthy food marketing. But our research and others' research has shown that, you know, that may be an even more vulnerable time for kids because they're starting to get their own money, they're making their own food decisions, they're consuming more media, and their peers are becoming a huge influence. So, you know, going and hanging out at McDonald's in the afternoon is something that a lot of kids at that age do, or, you know, stopping at the corner store for a soda. Yeah, so unfortunately in the U.S., that industry self-regulation is pretty much the main thing, but on a national level. But what we're seeing is that a lot of communities and local governments are starting to look at food marketing and looking at how it impacts the kids in their community and trying to do something about it. So, you know, soda taxes are a great revenue source, but one of the reasons, for example, that Philadelphia implemented their soda tax is because of research that we've done showing how sugary drink companies are targeting young people in their neighborhoods. And so, you know, specifically that product is harmful to their health. And that was another way that they supported their soda tax. Communities have started implementing laws about healthy kids meals and requiring kids meals to meet certain nutrition standards. So there's, you know, and there's more and more talk about, you know, about billboards and things like that in local communities. So that, I think, is where we're going to start seeing more awareness and concern about food marketing that's going on, and hopefully create some groundswell to create change.
Sure. Now, I have a question about the soda tax. That's only for the sugar, high-calorie soda, correct? It's not for diet soda? And if not for diet soda, why, when everyone who's a nutritionist knows diet soda is not healthy either? So,
The Philadelphia tax actually is for both diet and regular soda.
Oh, I'm so happy
to hear
that.
But that's unusual. Most cities just taxing sugary drinks. But, you know, I think the question about whether diet soda is healthy or not, I you know, that one hasn't, that one, we, the, I think the research is still in the early stages on that question. It's not 100% proven that diet soda is bad for you, but, you know, it's definitely something that parents tell us they don't want their children drinking. And it's interesting because, you know, one issue or one prediction with the increasing attention on the problems with regular soda was that diet soda consumption would increase, but it actually hasn't. So I think it's not, people don't really see it as a substitute. If they stop drinking regular soda, they move to something else.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I definitely have seen research. I couldn't pull it out of my hat right now, but I've definitely seen research that diet soda is bad for you.
Studies.
I mean, there was even research that said it doesn't help you lose weight. That it, you know, your brain somehow still thinks you're getting sugar, and so
right, right. There are some studies showing that. I mean, the you know, one thing at the Red Center, we're an academic research organization, and so you know, we feel like it's very important that all of the policy solutions that we support, you know, are supported by, you know, not just a few studies, but, you know, whether that the research overwhelmingly supports them. So that, you know, I think the jury's still out on diet soda, but
mm-hmm.
that okay. doesn't mean people should be drinking this.
Right, right. And have you studied how whether the advertising targets Black or Hispanic youth any
yes.
more than non-Black or Hispanic? Because, I mean,
yes.
you know, research certainly shows that the Black and Hispanic communities are more prone to the obesity and diabetes epidemic. And can you explain why that might be?
Yeah, well, we definitely have shown that companies are targeting their most unhealthy products to Black and Hispanic youth. You know, the candy category is one of the biggest advertisers in Black media and in Spanish language media. Sodas, snack foods. I mean, those unfortunately, a lot of the worst products are being aimed at those populations, which, you know, as you said, is an issue because of the health disparities that are already affecting them. And the, another issue is that we're seeing, especially among adolescents, that for white middle-income adolescents, television viewing is going down, so that's contributing to a reduction in their traditional advertising exposure. But that's not happening in lower income communities, and so those disparities are getting even higher.
Mm-hmm. But what about? I mean, you know, studies show that they're watching less TV, but they're not necessarily less in front of a square screen.
Right,
so,
right.
You
they
know,
are,
so
yeah.
What's happening with marketing on the Internet? Is that not a problem or equally
well,
a problem?
The you know, the marketing on in traditional Internet, like websites, or we've looked at Advergame sites, which are sites that companies have developed full of branded games that support their product. Exposure is actually going down on those, but it's moving to mobile media. And so instead of big game websites, now companies a lot of companies now have mobile apps that are basically games that you play with their brands. And social media is becoming huge for The companies that are aiming at teenagers especially, they all have Facebook pages and Instagram and even Snapchat accounts that kids can follow. And another concern about those, that type of media, is that it's not, it's much more, it's much sneakier than a traditional TV advertising. I mean, any child knows that a TV ad is an advertisement, but they don't understand that, you know, if their friend likes Red Bull's Facebook post and they get it, that this is really a form of marketing. You know, it's much more hidden. And because of that, it could be even more effective because, you know, you just don't, the kids especially don't recognize it. It's advertising and discount it because of that.
Wow. Wow. I didn't even think of that. I mean, I was thinking of, you know, more like regular commercials on websites more than
yes.
actual that, you
yeah.
know, just liking a
yeah,
page
I mean,
all of a sudden.
They're...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that there are fewer commercials on websites than on TV, but they're still there. And actually the other thing about the mobile site, the mobile access now is that, you know, it used to be that you could only access the internet when you were at home. Now, you know, kids can access the internet anywhere they are. So parents can't even monitor, you know, have no way to monitor what they're seeing anymore, which is another concern that we have.
Uh-huh. Wow. Dr. Harris, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I actually would like to talk to you about marketing of baby and toddler food. I know you were studying that recently, and I'd love to hear
yep.
some of the findings on that. So everyone listening, don't go away. I'm talking with Dr. Jennifer Harris from the Rudd Center of Food Policy and Obesity, and you're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Tony Hendra.
And Jeff Chrysler.
Of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
On PRN.
Your source for organic,
gluten-free,
sustainable
satire.
Activist Radio on the Progressive Radio Network is a weekly program for all Americans who are not in the wealthiest 1% of the U.S. population. Fred and Eli offer a little history you didn't learn in high school, some news stories you haven't seen on our mainstream media, and a couple of songs to help you join the resistance. Our website, classwars.org, offers a little background on how the few richest of our citizens lie to the rest of us to expand their power and wealth. Class wars is a dirty term in our media, which always implies that America is above such crudeness. But the very rich are not above that at all. They are sick with greed, of course, but so far the rest of us are what might be worse. We haven't organized yet to fight back. So gear up for some class wars every Sunday from 5 to 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. That's www.prn.fm.
Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm the host of What Women Must Know, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. As a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist, I am always seeking the latest solutions to help you rejuvenate and regenerate your body, mind, and spirit. So join me, Dr. Cheryl, and my inspiring guests, authors, health practitioners, and wise elders, to empower yourself by expanding your knowledge about your health and your hormones, and to gain fresh new perspectives on life. That's What Women Must Know every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with Dr. Jennifer Harris from the Rudd Center of Food Policy and Obesity, and we're talking about the marketing of junk foods to children. And right before the break, I was asking Dr. Harris about a recent study she did on marketing of baby and toddler foods. Dr. Harris, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Can you share with us what you found in studying the marketing of baby and toddler foods and what some of the key findings were?
Sure. Well, we looked at what products are being marketed to parents to serve their babies and their toddlers. And just as an FYI, the food industry considers a toddler a child up to 3 years old. So what we found was actually a bit surprising. The first thing was that on traditional media, there isn't a lot of infant formula advertising anymore. It's gone down a lot in the past few years. But what the infant formula companies are doing instead is going to social media and mom blogs. So they've created these incredible campaigns. There was one called the Mommy Wars that Similac sponsored that had a ton of views and, you know, really trying to promote their products through also mom blogs who, you know, talk about the formulas that they serve their kids and that sort of thing. So that was one kind of surprising thing. But what has happened is the same companies have really increased their advertising of a product that people call it different things, but they're toddler formulas, toddler milks. They're basically powdered milk with added sweeteners that are being promoted as great, as healthy and nutritious choices for kids 1 to 3 years old. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Association of Family Physicians say that children at that age do not need these products. They are not necessary. They should be drinking whole milk until 2, and then other milk. And then the fact that they have added sweeteners, so they're actually sugar sweetened beverages that are being promoted as healthy choices for toddlers. So that was very surprising to us, and it's a fairly recent phenomenon. And the claims that they're using are things like, you know, helping your child's cognitive development, helping them grow, helping them, you know, succeed in life, all of these really unsubstantiated claims. So the advocacy community, you know, is really starting to latch onto that and try to get that marketing stopped because it's not honest.
And is that being targeted more to the Black and Hispanic communities as well?
Well, it's definitely targeting Hispanic communities. There's a product called Nido, which is a product from Mexico that advertises a lot. It's one of those toddler milks. And also Ensagrow is another brand that advertises more on Spanish TV than any other type of media. So they're definitely targeting the Hispanic parents, as well as Pediasure, which is a product that only children who, you know, are malnourished or sick should be drinking it, but it's the most advertised baby and toddler food on Spanish language TV.
What's it called?
So, Pediasure,
uh-huh.
which is a product that's basically, it's very high in calories and high in sugar, and it's designed for underweight children who really need, you know, a lot of calories and not the average child. So that is an issue we found. And the other, when we were looking at the food products, you know, most of the baby foods, the pureed fruits and vegetables, those kinds of things are nutritious choices. You know, parents can decide if they want to buy store-bought food or make their own, but they're, you know, those products are not going to harm their children. But those aren't the ones that are advertised the most. What's advertised most are snack foods, baby and toddler snack foods, that these often have added sugar in them. They have, you know, carbohydrates, or very little fruits or vegetables, but they're advertised as nutritious products for kids. So that was another issue that we saw with mm-hmm. the marketing. And a lot of the organic, like Plum Organics and Earth's Best and Happy Family, Happy Baby, Happy Toddler, a lot of those companies, and Gerber was the other one, offer these snack foods that really are not necessary or even nutritious
that much better.
For kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You also looked at look-alike smart snacks.
Yeah.
What were those outcomes? I mean, there's certain looks that, you know, people recognize even without looking closely, like a Coca-Cola look or, a Cheetos look. And so, you know, were you finding that some cheaper brands are trying to make their products look like them, but they were equally bad, or better brands are trying to look like, or trying to cash in on the the marketing of other brands? What kind of study was it? And did you find that there was any, were they using these lookalikes to try to promote healthier options or just to reinforce the poor choices?
Well, the lookalike snack study we did was looking at products that are sold in schools. So the USDA implemented last year, they implemented nutrition standards for products that can be sold as snacks in schools, in vending machines, in school stores, in the cafeteria. And so, you know, for the first time, the idea behind those rules were that schools couldn't be selling, you know, junk food or sugary drinks anymore to students. But what ended up happening is many of the companies, the snack food companies that were in schools before, reformulated their products and to meet the new nutrition standards. And so those are being sold in schools. And what we're talking about are, you know, reduced fat versions of Cheetos or Doritos or reduced sugar versions of Rice Krispie treats or Pop-Tarts or, you know, whole grain Goldfish crackers. So the companies reformulated their products. They put them in packages that look almost identical to the products that are sold in stores, but they're not selling these more nutritious versions in stores. They're only offering them to kids in schools. And so what has happened is they've basically found a way to market their junk food products, to keep marketing their junk food products to students in schools. And our research shows that, you know, basically parents and kids are confused. They don't know the difference between the version that's in the school and the version that's in the store. They, don't know, they don't understand that one is healthier than the other. And I think a lot of nutritionists would argue that, you know, a reduced or a whole grain Pop-Tart is really not, a nutritious choice for children. So that was another issue. And the school, a lot of people who advocate for improved foods in schools, you know, spent a lot of effort, time and effort to get these nutrition standards implemented, and then the companies have, you know, basically found a loophole so that if you look at the vending machine, you still see the same junk food brands that you saw before the nutrition standards were put in place. So that's making people, a lot of people, angry. And, you know, we're seeing school districts starting to say they're not going to sell these branded products, even though they do meet the nutrition standards.
Oh, that's good. Because, yeah, why have snack foods in school anyway? It should just be real food.
Yep.
Right?
I agree. I mean, you know, there's a lot of issues with, you know, revenue issues and you know, the whole school food environment is one that is quite complicated and hard
right.
to change,
yes.
unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Have you done any research on these power drinks? You know, I mean, my kids played soccer, and I could not believe uh-huh. the push they had of, like, drinking things like Gatorade and to try to keep my
yes.
kids from drinking Bright Blue
yes.
Gatorade was a major
yes.
challenge when everybody else is drinking that. Have you looked into those drinks at all, and is there a healthier choice for parents whose kids are coming home saying they need to have Gatorade or they're not going to make a
right.
score in their game?
Right. Well, first of all, the only athletes that need sports drinks like Gatorade or Powerade are the ones who are, you know, burning hundreds of calories in an hour and, you know, sweating profusely. So I think that most kids playing sports don't qualify for that. You know, water is the best choice for kids who are playing sports, plain water.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but the sports drink companies have, you know, really done a great job, you know, of marketing and convincing kids and parents that these are healthy choices. We did some research with parents who basically believed, yes, that Gatorade is a healthy choice for kids, even though it has high sugar and no, you know, nutrients that kids need. So, and the other thing is that Gatorade is very heavily marketed to Black youth, and one of the most marketed products, you know, targeted to them. And if you look at the ads, you know, most of them are Black athletes. So this is really, we've done some qualitative research with Black youth, and they all cite Gatorade as a great example of companies who are trying to reach them and with a positive message. So it's very, you know, you have to give them credit for being very good at marketing their product, but it really is, I think, an area where a lot of the sugary drink campaigns are really trying to focus on to, you know, convince, to teach parents that these really aren't nutritious products. They're basically sugar added to water, and they're not. They have a little less sugar than a soda, but they're still not a healthy option.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so there is no healthy option. You know, there is no substitute for a Gatorade that's healthier.
No, I mean,
right.
you know, there are low calorie. There are, you know, diet Gatorades, but again, that's not
right. no
something
good.
we would recommend. So.
Right.
No, I mean, there's nothing. Water is really all that children need for almost all of the types of sports and exercise that they do.
Mm-hmm. So does the Red Center, or do you have recommendations or suggestions to parents so that they can limit their children's exposure to junk food marketing?
Well, the most important thing, and this is, I would say, for parents of very young children, like under 6 years old, don't let them watch commercial television at all. I mean, there's no need. There's, you know, there's videos, there's public television, but I think most parents don't realize that, you know, how much unhealthy food marketing there is on Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network or Saturday morning cartoons. It's and it's not necessary. You know, for older kids, I think parents really need to know what they're doing on their smartphones and talk to them about, you know, turning off the, you know, putting the smartphone away at dinner, putting it away before they go to bed, really placing limits. And, you know, if you're a brave parent, you can monitor what your kids are doing on their smartphones. So it's something that I think isn't in parents, on parents' radar screen that really needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, because, you know, there is a big push to try to improve the nutrition education at schools, and we hear a lot of talk about school gardens, and kids are, you know, we're trying to get kids young to, you know, learn about healthy eating. And, you know, I had someone on last week just say, you know, talk to your kids like they're, you know, smart. Don't talk to them like they're, you know, like they wouldn't understand. Talk to them about how this isn't good for your body, and, you know, we want to eat healthy. And, you know, when they start reading, you can even let them look at the labels and say, you know, you don't want to eat something you can't pronounce. And, you know, a lot of that,
well,
I think, is really – go ahead.
No, I'm glad you said that, because I think the other thing that parents don't understand is how the companies – are also marketing to them. So they market the foods to the kids, but then they also do lots of things that make parents think that these products are good for their kids or maybe aren't as healthy. I mean, we've done studies looking at nutrition claims on packages of kids' foods, and we found that the less healthy the product is, the more claims there are in the package. Things you know, good source of vitamin C or made with whole grains, all of those kinds of
heart
things.
Heart healthy.
Yeah, heart healthy. Those are all tools that, you know, or tactics that the companies use to convince parents that these products really aren't so bad for their kids.
Right.
So I think the another important thing is to just not buy the products that kids ask for on television, and, you know, when they are, or that they see advertised, or that their friends are eating, you know. And I think if they don't have, if their parents, you know, take that position, then it's really the best way to counteract the marketing.
And unfortunately, we don't have enough time to go into all the other issues around subsidizing the junk food, so that the junk food is comes out cheaper than real food.
Right,
that's a huge problem. And I've talked about that many times before. But, Jennifer, I just want to thank you so much for joining us on the show. The work you're doing at the Rudd Center is tremendous and so important, and I am on your email list, and I love receiving your newsletters and the work that you're doing. So thank you so much. You want to just share with people your website?
Sure. We're at the UConnRedCenter.org, and lots of great information on the site. And, you know, if they're interested, they could also sign up for our newsletter. Get the results every month.
Great, and I highly recommend it, everybody. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll see you all again next week. Have a great rest of the week.